This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living. In the studio with me, consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Saravanandan for her monthly show. And today we're going to be discussing raising children as individuals in line with Universal Children's Day. It was on the 20th of November. It is usually on the 20th of November every year. And, you know, this year we have decided on BFM to talk about child rights. I think always we go back to the Convention on the Rights of the Child when it comes to Universal Children's Day. After that, everything is forgotten, Dr. Rajini. Yeah. Nobody talks about it after that. But our children, mini adults, they are individuals. They have rights and they have a voice, which ideally should be respected. But given our Asian values and our culture, very rarely do we even think about, you know, the children and what they have, their opinions and how they feel about things. In conjunction with this special day, we're going to be discussing how to help children strive as far as their rights are concerned in relation to health, in relation to education, in terms of self-expression, as well as a safe environment. Now, you would think, what does a five-year-old know about all of this? Well, if you have a question for her as to how much voice do you give your child, and I really want to know, give us a call. The number is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Rajini, what is this idea behind child rights? I mean, let's just go back to basics. What is this child rights and, you know, what is the idea behind it?
Mira, I think first thing is we got to make sure that we get it clear that children are not mini adults. And I think as pediatricians, we definitely believe that, not just from a physical perspective when we're dealing with children, because a child's body is not a mini adult's body. And I think the same way when we think socio-emotionally and even psychosocially about children, you know, we can't expect them to be thinking the way we are. And in fact, we are very important in terms of molding how they develop. And if you talk about child's rights, yes, we refer to the UN human rights paper, which Malaysia ratified as well.
With some reservations.
With some reservations, of course, because we can't seem to fulfill all of them.
Yep.
But, you know, we'll save that for another time. But, you know, it basically lists down rights that a child should have. So basic things like health, education, the right to play, the right to, you know, have access to clean water and food and nutrition and all that. And I think these are basic rights that I don't think we should be questioning. I think what's important is, are we definitely serving every child in Malaysia? Because there are pockets of children, not just the refugees or, you know, children of asylum seekers, etc., but even within our own Malaysian population that are not getting some of these basic human rights. Forget about the child's rights to be heard, etc.
Yeah. So where do you see Malaysia in terms of from the time we ratified this convention? You know, as I said, well, there were some reservations, and what comes to mind is child marriage, of course. And as you said, that conversation is a very long one.
Yeah.
But what has it meant for the children in this country in terms of the communities, the families, the parents and the children?
I think from a health perspective, there's been a lot in terms of ensuring that, you know, basic things like immunization, healthcare, especially in the early years, you know, with our clinic kesehatans and upskilling health services in primary healthcare for children. I think in Malaysia, we've done well in that sense. And if you look at infant mortality and all that, that has dropped. So I think in some ways, we have moved on from when we first ratified it. However, if we look at, like I said, you know, the groups of children within our society, so the stateless children, and I'm glad that now we are hearing about them because we never used to hear about them. And you know,
they can go to school now.
They can go to school now. Mm-hmm. Isn't that fantastic?
Yes.
And the refugee children, we can't run away from the fact that almost every country in this world has got refugees. And, you know, I think we have to accept that and we have to think of them not just refugees, but these are children and they should have access to some of these basic human rights. So in some areas, we've improved with our own children. I think one group that we are slowly losing sight of are the urban poor, if you ask me, because the children who live in our PPR flats, if we look at our children who come from households, and I'm not talking about the poverty line that the government has set, but, you know, the children in cities where parents are struggling to make ends meet, we are maybe starting to fail those children. And now with other factors coming in, things like our immunization rates are dropping.
Yes.
Parents are making these decisions not based on hard facts, but they're denying the children those basic rights that are readily available, that have been provided by the government, if we take immunization as an
example. Okay, so let's just talk about immunization, because that is an area of concern. How would you link the child rights in relation to this issue? I mean, parents think that they are doing the best for their children. We always have their mm-hmm. best intentions in mind. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, if we talk about, you know, the rights of the child to health, one of the first basic things that children need is protection from diseases that we can prevent. And immunizations are provided free within our government health system. You know, in Malaysia, we're very lucky. In Clinic Kesihatan, every Malaysian child can walk in and get these immunizations for free. And there is good evidence that these immunizations protect against deadly diseases. I mean, look at diphtheria. Many of us have never seen it in our lifetime. And, you know, to suddenly see it mm-hmm. within our hospitals, in our cities, amongst our own Malaysian children, I think that is something that's worrying. And you see, I think parents may think that they are doing the right thing by the child based on what their perceptions are, but actually they are denying their child right to basic healthcare needs when they're denying them immunizations.
Okay, and I think in relation to the urban poor, there was a UNHCR report.
On nutrition.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's just, you know, it tells you that child rights are not being acknowledged or not being looked at in a serious manner.
And in that sense, you have to ask yourself, you know, are we right to blame the parents? Or is it that, you know, the parents are struggling themselves, mm-hmm. many of them single families, single parent families, and cost of living is high. They have to be out at work. And, you know, sometimes food advertising in Malaysia is unrestricted, and they think that they're doing the right thing for their child because they think that buying a packet of instant noodles, which is labeled as being free of MSG and full of vitamins, is actually a healthy option for their child or a healthy alternative. Mm-hmm. So I think it's also about, we need to look at the bigger picture, is basically what I'm saying.
But then are children mature enough to understand their rights?
You know, if you talk about an infant, of course not. And they're reliant on us to make those decisions. And if we make those wrong decisions, it can cost that infant a life, or it can result in disability, which is going to affect the child for the rest of his life. If you talk about, you know, we're talking about younger children, preschool children. They have rights. They have a right to say, I don't want to finish everything that you've given me because it's too much.
To eat.
And especially if you've piled their plate on with an adult-sized portion. But they don't have the right to choose what to eat. That's up to the adult. It's us that puts things on their plate for them to eat. So in that sense, we have to be the decision makers. But at the same time, they have to start to know their body, start to know how to react, and make simple decisions.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine many of you thinking right now, you know, for goodness sake, she just better finish that plate of whatever I've put on there. I've put on it, right? I mean, we work hard. We want to give our children the best, you know.
Yes, but if you are putting an adult-sized portion and that little child is only 3 years old, and you're forcing that child to eat everything on the plate, you're actually reprogramming his brain to think that he needs to eat a lot of food all the time. You are actually starting the whole process of obesity. And, you know, it's not the child's fault then.
Yeah, and you know, I think our World Diabetes Day show was on the family diabetes and the family, and that came up actually how we feel chubby children are healthy, and
exactly,
it's a double-edged sword because now we have more and more children who are diabetic at very young age. So the idea of bringing up a child as an individual for us, a lot of us, is foreign to our culture. How do we reconcile these traditional perspectives with, you know, the correct one? Yeah? and even I'm thinking to myself, and I said this to you before we started this show, Dr. Rajni, I was happy I didn't know anything about the Convention of the Rights of the Child when my children were really young, because it's just, we're just not wired to give our children a voice. And then if we are going to do that, to what extent do we give them this voice? So, you know, chime in. I want to know what you think. We all have children. Should they be given, you know, how much rights should they be given? And, you know, what does the CRC really mean when it comes to rights? Give us a call. The number is 0377332900. You can WhatsApp 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living, and I'm Meera Sivasuthi. In the studio with me, consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Saranandan. We are discussing raising children as individuals in line with Universal Children's Day, which was on the 20th of November. So let's come back to the topic of us, Dr. Rajini. Us trying to reconcile our traditional perspectives versus, you know, what is this, child rights? Are you kidding me or what? So how do we even get going with understanding this idea of child rights?
So we need to first get rid of the notion that children should be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, why are we talking about this now? I think I'm gonna bring up the topic of sexual abuse. And I think for a lot of Malaysians, you know, it's been a little alarming that we are hearing more and more about cases of sexual abuse, child abuse. And, you know, what struck me is actually now it's actually the children coming up. They're running out of their homes, of the homes that they're being abused in, and they're searching for help. And for me, the fact that they are actually taken seriously is a good thing. I think in the past we probably didn't hear such stories. Of course, media plays a role, but I think increasingly children are getting braver at wanting to speak up. And I think that shows you that society is starting to accept that, you know, and we are starting to take them seriously. And I think that itself should tell us that we should be nurturing our children so that they can come up and tell us if they are in trouble, you know, if they feel they're at risk of trouble, and how is it we can help them to prevent themselves from getting into trouble? I mean, don't we as parents and as guardians of children want them to be brought up in a safe place? Of course, we can't always protect them. And what's the next best thing is for to teach them to ask for help. And I think that's very, very, very important. And you know, we talk about child's rights. Yes. And, you know, a lot of parents will say, what about my rights? I'm the parent here. You know, I'm the one who suffers if you keep pushing these child rights. But, you know, we're not talking about children taking over the world or running the parents' lives or things like that. We're talking about just giving children space and the confidence to be able to make decisions in their life, because they are going to grow up to become adults who are able to make decisions, who are able to problem solve, who are going to have to work collaboratively with other children. And, you know, I think one of the things in schools is that so far, children have been taught within classrooms. There's been very little in terms of discussion. Some teachers do take on what children have to say and ask for opinions, but you know, I've experienced it with my children over the years where various teachers have come and said, you know, things like, you know, you talk too much in class, you ask me too many questions, I think you need to find your own private tutor sort of thing. And that's actually happened to my daughter once. But at the same time, in the same school, another teacher has said, oh, I think it's really great that kids ask questions because then other kids learn from each other. So, you know, I think increasingly children need to learn to speak up. One, for them to learn about the world, for them to be able to share ideas with each other, because they're going to become the adults who then have to work together with each other. And if we don't give them the space and the confidence and we keep suppressing them and saying that we don't want to hear what you have to say, then when they need help, they won't come and look for us either.
Would you then say, as a society, our failing is really we haven't built this this idea of listening?
Yes.
I think that's a very basic skill.
Yes. We expect children to listen to us, but we don't listen to our children. You know, when you step into the house at the end of a working day, you start to bark instructions, right? Put away your clothes, put away your bags, time to clean up, come on, get ready for dinner. But we rarely ever sit down to really listen to how their day has been. We ask them, what did you do in school today? What we expect them to tell us most of the time is what they learned, what subjects they did, what marks they got in exams, or if there was a test, etc. When they start to tell us little things about, oh, you know, so-and-so got into trouble with another kid because he's, you know, we sometimes switch off at that point. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're all guilty of it, including me.
Oh, yes.
But maybe those are the things we need to listen to, because that tells us a lot about what our children see in this world. And those are the things that we need to then talk about, because those are the life lessons that's going to carry them through.
Yeah, rather than the marks.
Yes.
And what the teacher said. Well, maybe what the teacher said, but maybe. You know, that there's a story in there as well.
Yeah.
But how do we draw the line between respecting a child's view and giving children that authority over adults? Where is that? It's a very fine line.
You know, Mira, I think giving children their rights doesn't take away our role as parents. And I think, you know, whatever it is, we're the parent. What we're doing is we're listening to them and we're giving them that space to say what they want, they feel. And I think that's important. But at the end of the day, we are the ones who are setting the boundaries for them. And within our own family unit, we have to decide what's acceptable and what's not, taking into also account what's acceptable in the community and society that we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, there are many issues that are cropping up now about, you know, LGBT, etc. And if we're just going to shush kids and say, no such thing, doesn't exist, it's illegal in Malaysia or it's haram, it's not going to go away. We're not going to encourage our children to voice their opinions and their thoughts. And I think, you know, there's no right or wrong as children, but it's about explaining to them, okay, we live in this society where we are guided by certain religious beliefs and, you know, society feels this way, but how you feel is not wrong. But sometimes we have to adapt the way we feel in the society we live in. Now, as a child, you know, we were talking about choosing the clothes.
Yes.
Should we allow our children to choose the clothes? Now, think if it's going to be a huge battle in the morning that's going to spend, you know, take half an hour of your time, then don't let your child choose the clothes for school in the morning, you know, if they're going to preschool. And you may want to say, I'll let you choose at the weekend when we have more time. But on a school day, these are the things that you're allowed to wear and you can choose from one of them. So you're allowing choice within a certain boundary. And I think as parents, we have to be very clear about that. Giving a child's rights doesn't mean we give them ultimate freedom. Mm-hmm. We don't become permissive. It's about setting those boundaries and working within those boundaries, but allowing that child the confidence to speak up or to have a little discussion or argument with you.
And when should this happen? At what age should children be taught? Should we tell them they have rights? Or should we just live it? I don't want to tell them they have rights.
You don't have to say you have
yes.
rights. But, you know, it's amazing. Children learn about children's rights now a lot earlier than probably... Even if I look at my own family, you know, I don't think my eldest child knew anything about the UN
Convention,
mm-hmm. the children's rights. But with my youngest, and I think because it, you know, they really celebrated Children's Day and they talked about it in school, in primary school, I think it made her more aware, you know. And so you may not want to tell them, but they'll soon learn when they go to school.
Should schools start, you know, talking about this as well? And as I said, it's not about, you know, having the autonomy to pick your clothes, but, you know, on a broader scale, yes, for them to understand their rights as far as health is concerned, yes, as far as education, and as you said, self-expression, safe environment, yes, given that the world that we actually live in.
Yes, I think it's very important that they do. You know, and what's important is that we present it in a way that's understandable to them. Okay, we're not going to say, hey, kids, you've all got rights. It doesn't mean that you can take over the school, you know, but these are your rights. You can speak up. You can tell us if you're upset. If you don't want to tell us verbally, write to us, you know, things like that. And we should be encouraging them to participate in decision making with regards to their lives sometimes, you know. Gone are the days where we can say to children, this is your path in life and you have to follow it and you have to stick to it. Okay. I think now it's about, because in a look in our society today, and you know, in the medical line, we hear of so many young doctors talking about bullying.
Oh, yes.
Correct? And we hear about many of them dropping out of medicine. Well, I would say to a lot of those, to parents, did you make that decision for your child to become a doctor, or did your child make that decision? And when your child made that decision, did they know the career that they were getting themselves into? Because I can tell you that from my own personal experience, a lot of the young doctors who are disgruntled went into it not because they knew anything about it. They were told they were bright, they had the grades, you should become a doctor. And I think that's where, in a way, you know, we need to allow children to make decisions by guiding them to a certain extent as well.
Okay, we have Nigel Wong who's saying, especially at an early age, child rights also means the community or parents' recognition of and responsibility in ensuring children have a right to have access to the care and nurturing that they need to develop. Any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Nigel, you're right in that it's the parents' responsibility to ensure that in the early years, that the child's rights fulfilled for them. And, you know, this is tough, I think, for parents, because in trying to fulfill basic daily needs, they also have to think about how they manage their day-to-day and, you know, the childcare that they choose. But I think, you know, we now have to move forward from just thinking about what's the best for my child to what might be the best for the community around me. You know, Hannah, you was talking about having childcare facilities within workplaces. And I think we do need to start thinking about that. Employers need to start thinking about the rights of the children of their employees, because, you know, it starts from there. It's when the community starts thinking about children, then we can develop a society that gets better and better.
Yeah, I think she's looking at empowering, you know, mothers in PPR. Is it PPR flats?
PPR flats.
So that, you know, yeah, they can be trained and take on this childcare role, yeah, better for those who are going to work rather than, you know, the way it's being done at the moment. Yeah. How do we encourage different forms of self-expression, especially for children who have different abilities? And, you know, this is very much up your alley.
Yeah. And I think this is a forgotten group. You know, we've talked about, I'm glad, well, I guess I would have brought it up if you hadn't, but this is a big forgotten group in Malaysia. You know, we've always made decisions for children with disabilities in the sense that, you know, we think they can't make decisions, they can't express themselves, and hence, you know, we need to be dictating for them what needs to be done. And I believe that if you nurture a child, if you know that child has a disability, and from a very young age, you ensure that one of the main things you are prioritizing is communication, that child will learn to communicate what he or she wants to you. even children who may be physically not able to can be taught to say yes or no, mm-hmm. or to indicate yes, they like that, or no, they don't like that, from a very young age. And we need to learn to not just listen to children in the sense of listening to what they say, but we need to start learning to listen to children through their behaviors. If we look at babies, you know, babies cry if they're cold, if they're tired, if they're hungry. Yeah, we need to allow them to cry to be able to tell what that cry means.
Yeah.
If we are going to feed them on time and anticipate everything, they're not going to be able to communicate to us what they want. So it's very important that we start to listen to children's behaviors and not just to what they're able to say to us.
Body language as well.
Body language.
Especially children who are nonverbal, for an example, yeah. that's where it comes into play. And, you know, we need to teach also or encourage able-bodied children, or typically developing children, to respect non-typically developing children and respect their opinions. And you know, and I think it stems from the home, Dr. Rajini. I mean, yes. How do we, as parents with typically developing children, how do we, you know, get our children to understand? I mean, I think it stems from us that there are non-typically developing children as well, and they have a space in this world.
You know, children watch what we as adults do. And children learn behaviors from a very young age. And, you know, I often hear, you know, parents saying, oh, I'm worried about sending my child to a normal school because I'm scared he's going to be bullied. And, you know, sometimes some parents say, my child bullied because he's never seen a child who's not typically developing, when that situation comes up. But actually, children watch how we deal with people from all walks of life. It doesn't mean that if you've never met a person with a disability, that you won't know how to react to them. Okay, I think in our day-to-day dealings, if you watch people, how they treat colleagues, how they treat juniors, how they treat the cleaner and the in the area, how they treat the security guard, mm-hmm. tells you a lot about how this person is going to react when they meet a person with a disability. Because if you treat everyone the same, you won't have difficulties when it comes to children with disabilities, or even dealing with just children, seriously, because you will show the same respect to them in that sense. And, you know, one of the things that's important is children have the right to respect, as in for people to respect them. And the same goes for a person with a disability. Okay? Respect has to be earned, and it's a two-way process. Okay? So we cannot say that a child with a disability cannot respect another person, because actually, if you watch the way they behave and they interact with people, they can sense when they're getting respect and respond to that person much more to the person who does not give them respect. Mm-hmm. And you see this with teachers who deal with children with special needs. You know, some parents tell me, oh, you know, he's when he's with his teacher, he says a lot more, or he behaves so much better and he complies with the teacher than he does with me. Now, to some extent, it's probably because the teacher has formed that bond and that there's that mutual respect going. And so that child is able to open up.
Does that say something about the parent, though?
Yeah. I mean, all kids behave better in school than they do. But, you know, when a child's able to communicate better with another adult than with you, I think you have to ask yourself why. If your child goes to another adult and starts telling them their problems but is not able to open up to you, of course, there must be other complex issues, but you should then start to question, what's my relationship with my child that my child couldn't come to me to say that he was being hurt? Why is it that he was happy to open up to the teacher or to his nanny instead of me? I think then you have to ask yourself, What's your relationship with your child?
We're discussing raising children as individuals in view of Universal Children's Day, which was on the 20th of November. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician in the studio with us. If you have a question, give us a call, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up, I want to find out, how do we help our children respect the opinion of others? And I think this is something they will carry through with them right up to the workplace. It's my way or the highway most of the time for many of us. So give us a call once again, 03-7733-2900. We'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, and if you have just joined us, it's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician in the studio. We're discussing raising children as individuals, looking at the Convention on the Rights of the Child, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, which Malaysia has ratified with some reservations, but it really outlines a child's rights. And, you know, for those of you who missed the first two parts, well, you want to go and listen to the podcast, because I know it's totally very much not in line with how we've been brought up to give children a voice. We're talking about non-discrimination. We're talking about, you know, devotion to the best interests of the child. We're talking about the right to life, survival and development, to respect the views of the child, and why all of that is so important in, you know, for our children going forward. So we've spoken a lot about, you know, child rights in relation to children with disabilities. We've spoken about what this means for the community and parents. But, you know, access to information, I think this is one area which we as parents are very happy to give them the right for access to information. I mean, here, take the gadget, do whatever you like with it. But that's not just about entertainment and academic knowledge, Dr. Rajini. Let's talk about access to information. What does that really mean?
Access to information is how we, you know, to me, it's how we encourage children to look up information so that they can, you know, ensure that they make the right decisions in terms of, you know, health matters, in terms of decisions that they make, in terms of knowing what the dangers are outside in the real world, in terms of ways of trying to protect themselves. Okay, so if I take, for example, one of the things that I think a child, you know, beyond the UN document, but I think it's the right of every child to be taught how to protect themselves, in a sense. And how does that fall on us adults? From a very young age, we need to teach children about dangers in the home, in the community. So, for example, hiding a pair of scissors and not allowing your child to use scissors is not teaching your child the dangers associated with scissors. Mm-hmm. You need to allow that child to use scissors while teaching them, okay, you can only use it to cut paper when mummy's here. As soon as we're finished doing this activity, mummy's putting it away because we can't use this pair of scissors to cut the curtains or cut our hair, or, you know, because... So it's important that we don't just overprotect our children, but we expose our children to dangers. I'm giving that example because I see so many children nowadays who don't know how to use scissors, and it's because the parents are not letting them, and parents feel it's the school's duty to teach a child how to use scissors to cut paper. So, you know, I'm using that as a very simplistic example.
Such a basic thing.
Right?
Yeah.
So the same way, we don't allow children to cross the road because it's dangerous. So what do parents do? Drive their car up right in front of the school gate, block everybody else, just so their child doesn't have to cross the road or to even walk a further distance down in case they get kidnapped along the way.
Yep. I was just going to say that kidnapping is something that we worry about.
But is that the way to teach your child how to protect themselves? No, you need to teach your child, when they go to school, this is mummy's phone number. If there's an emergency, you call me. You need to teach your child where they're from, where their house is, so that if they're lost, they can tell the security guard and they can tell the person in the shopping mall, this is my mummy's name, this is my mummy's phone number, this is my home address, please help me. many parents don't think about these things. But, you know, it's funny because in our part of our developmental assessments is looking at the child's ability to answer questions about themselves. And most children, by the time they enter year one, should be able to tell you their home address, their parents, their birthday, how old they are, their gender, who their parents' names are. And many of them should be able to tell you the birth date. But half the time, parents are not teaching these things. Okay, so a parent needs to know that they need to teach children how to protect themselves and allow their children to make mistakes so that from those mistakes, you know, once a child cuts their hair and accidentally snips their ear, they're not going to cut their hair again with that pair of scissors.
Well, we can't take that chance.
Okay, let's not take that chance.
Snipping the ear, Dr. Adjani, the hair maybe, but not the ear. Certainly not.
Okay, but if you're not going to, I mean, all of us, when we cook, haven't we taken a cut?
Yes.
Don't we learn to be careful the next time?
Definitely.
Okay. In the same way, children have to make mistakes. Okay, maybe snipping the ears a bit too much, but, you know, I'm thinking of my own child. But if...
Did she really?
Well, I'm not talking about snipping the ear until it drew blood, but, you know, she accidentally cut her finger, but it didn't draw blood. It was painful, but she knew the next time, okay, I have to hold the paper a little bit further. So, you know, it's about making mistakes. If you don't learn how to fall, how do you know how to judge where you're going to put your foot the next time? So I think it's important for us to teach that. And the next step is, where can people touch me and where can't people touch me? You know, we don't teach these things anymore. Was I taught? To some extent, yes, but not maybe only by my parents, but by even by teachers. I still remember in school, we talked about, you know, pendidikan kesehatan, you know, about looking after yourself, dressing yourself, you cannot come out of the room without a towel and little things like that, that, you know, which really should be taught at home, not in schools. But we learned a lot of these things along the way because we were not distracted so much by TV and gadgets. By sticking a gadget in front of a child, you're not allowing them that time to explore the world and to see the world as it is. Now, if you're going to give your child that gadget, why not use that gadget then to teach your child personal safety? There are lots of websites now teaching children about, you know, where they should be touched, where they shouldn't, how to keep yourself safe. Many websites now that we can. So I think if you're not able to do that, but you've provided your child with a gadget, why not show your child how to use that gadget to gain information as well?
And since they're on it, why not? We often forget about a child's right to privacy. And I think we've seen many incidents in Malaysia recently of how parents have used their children and gotten into a whole lot of trouble based on what they've posted on social media. I think there was one just recently where, you know, they tracked down where the children were studying and, you know, they're starting to harass these children. So let's talk about the right to privacy.
Yeah. And, you know, we created this problem for ourselves through social media, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is where, as responsible adults, we need to understand that children are often innocent victims. If you take the recent example, what did the children do wrong? Why should they be involved in this whole situation? So what if they go to a vernacular school? You know, is it their fault that their father did what they did? It isn't. And I think what's important is that we as a community start protecting children and not using them as pawns for mistakes that we've made or in a way to threaten other people or to get back at adults. And, you know, to me, that's a form of abuse in a sense. If these children are aware and have access to social media, I'm not condoning what the man did. I'm taking the perspective of the child here.
Yeah.
Forget the incident. But if these children have access to social media and are able to see the comments on social media about their parent, what do you think they're going to feel? As a child, we are often very protective of the people who care about us. And you're going to instill feelings of anger, feelings of, you know, wanting revenge, very much so, because you will be reading what is being said.
Yep. And a lot of this information will be on the web
exactly
almost forever.
Yes. And these are impressionable minds. children are not always able to filter what is right and what is wrong. And this is where they need adults to help them filter. Well, if the adults themselves are impulsive and have no filters, then we can see that this is going to perpetuate, and the community that we're nurturing is going to be a community that is going to be abusive and not supportive of each other and, you know, not have boundaries. Might as well have a lawless society, I think.
Yeah, I think this just goes back to the fact that we don't really understand child rights.
Yes.
It's very basic. Yeah, I think a lot of adults act based on emotion.
Yes.
And that's where things go awry. So when it comes to making decisions in the best interest of the child, how will we know what's in their best interest, Dr. Rajini? How can you just quickly sum up, very simply, how do we know it's in their best interest?
You know, as adults, we have access to information. And so when making decisions, we need to take into account not just our emotions and our perceptions, but actual information out there. And I think when I talk about this, I'm referring specifically more to the health decisions that we make, because we're seeing a lot of parents making a lot of wrong health decisions, especially in relation to immunization. That's one. As when we're dealing with adolescents, I think we need to take a step back and make sure we build on relationships and make decisions together. Sometimes those decisions may be the wrong decision, but it's the decision that you're allowing your child to make by guiding them through that whole process. And, you know, it's about nurturing relationships from a very young age.
And how does a rights-based perspective sort of change the way we raise our children? I mean, do you think that, you know, we will be a different society in terms of understanding child rights in, what, 10 years, 5 years?
I think the more we talk about children's rights, and for most of society and for most parents, when they're dealing with their children, the document is in the back of their mind, really. But I think what is important is that we learn to nurture children who are able to have access to good health, good nutrition, a good community to live in. We learn to teach children good interpersonal relationships, because they're going to be the adults of the future. And if we don't guide them on those basic things that a child needs from a young age, then we're going to have difficulties as a society in the future. You know, if we don't allow children to speak up about themselves being abused, they're going to keep it inside of them. And many of those who are abused end up being abusers. So, you know, we think about that mushrooming.
It's a vicious cycle.
It is a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. Your message this Universal Children's Day?
Listen to children. They have rights. Let's make the right decisions and adopt the right parenting or nurturing skills in terms of bringing them up within our homes, within our schools, within our communities, and within our country.
Thank you very much for joining me today. Dr. Rajini Saravanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician. This is Universal Children's Day. We were speaking about raising children as individuals on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.